The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of The Cult Vault. Today I have something different, and I hope that it will be a refreshing change for some of the listeners who have requested interviews with people who decided to join their movements later in life, rather than finding themselves born into or taken in by a family member. Today I talked to Chris, who was a member of Dharn Yoga, a yoga-based movement from Korea that encourages participants to drop all family, friends and responsibility and live for the movement of Dharn Yoga itself. Before we get started, I just wanted to let everyone know that for £1 a month, you can support me at patreon.com/thecultvault and get access to monthly exclusive interviews. For £5 a month, you can access monthly exclusive deep dive content that focuses on a different cult each month. And speaking of patrons, a huge welcome and a massive thank you to my newest patron, Megan. It makes my week when someone joins our small group and helps me get one step closer to full-time podcasting and bringing you even better content. Thank you so much, and I really hope you enjoy being here. But for now, here is Chris. So hi, Chris, and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. We're going to be discussing something that I hadn't heard of at all before we began chatting, so that's really exciting for me today. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them a little bit about who you are?
Sure, thanks. My name's Chris, and I'm just a guy out here in Seattle, Washington. I'm a father and a husband, and doing my thing, kind of always been a bit of a seeker and a searcher and a wanderer. And that kind of led me to the experience, that which is our topic today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And can you tell us a little bit about the movement that you became a part of?
Yeah, it was at the time called Dharn Yoga. And they have since rebranded themselves as Body and Brain Yoga and Tai Chi. And they're a Korean organization. But they have centers all over the world. And there was a big expose that came out on them from some major news sources, Rolling Stone, CNN, and Forbes, and a few others in around 2009, 2010. And after that big fallout of bad press, they changed their name to Body and Brain at that time. And since then, there hasn't been much reporting on them or their movement, like, at all. And they're still out there operating. They had to scale back from like an all-time high around the time that those stories came out, but they have over 100 centers in the United States. They have centers in UK, Russia, China. There's some other, several other countries as well, but they're out there and they're still doing their thing, taking advantage of people.
So if I was to Google Dharn Yoga, I'd be able to find those articles. But if I was to Google Body and Brain Yoga and Tai Chi, I might not necessarily be able to make that link between the two names.
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. If you look up Dharn Yoga, a lot of cult stuff comes up and those stories come up. And I think a little bit of it might come up with Body and Brain, but mostly you'll get I'm sure that they're a major business. They advertise with Google. So if someone searches that, then they have their preferred results come up first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What types of things were these articles exposing in particular? Do you remember?
Sure. There was a big lawsuit from former members alleging brainwashing and even sexual assault. And then there's some other lawsuits from former devotees, which were their lowest level devotees were the Dawn Masters, and those were the people that led the classes. They did the majority of that sort of stuff, standing in front of the room and getting people going with the classes. And I'm sure they did all the other work around the center as well, like cleaning and just clerical work, opening and closing, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Okay. So
they had a lawsuit. The former Dawn Masters, a few of them sued and were alleging that, you know, they were not paid, which they weren't. They're all volunteers, almost like monks in a way.
Right. Okay.
And they're completely under the control of the organization. They generally will live in like a small apartment with several other masters, and they're on duty all day. From the moment they wake up, they'll have their own personal prescribed like prayers and exercises that they have to do. And then there's probably, you know, early morning, like 5 a.m. or something, they'll have some kind of group meeting with that'll have prayers and exercises and maybe some just a group news type stuff. And then they go and teach classes all day and then do the same thing at night. There's a meeting with the group at night and then they go to bed and start it all over.
And they're expected to do this level of work with no financial input from Dawn Yoga.
Absolutely. And it all goes back to the driving force behind all of it is they have a vision to save the world. And this all comes down from the founder, who they consider their prophet and guru, this Dr. Ilchi Lee. And I don't know if he's actually a doctor, so I put those in quotes, but that's Ilchi Lee isn't his real name either. That's some sort of word for chosen one,
okay,
or something like that. But he had this vision that they could save the world and save humanity from destruction by creating this movement of wellness and well-being, which was Dawn Yoga and then Body and Brain Yoga. And the vision, the practical application, was creating 100 million Dawn healers. And the Dawn healer is just one level above a casual attendee to the classes. If you want to get more involved, you're like, I really love this. And to their credit, a lot of the physical stuff is really helpful for people, but they didn't really come up with any of it. It's a lot of Tao based exercises and ancient Korean and Asian exercises. And so people have a lot of success getting over a variety of ailments, everything from chronic illness, like a Crohn's disease type stuff, or just depression, low back pain, you name it. They were very adept at helping people heal, which is part of the great tragedy, is they could have something really beautiful there, but they ruin it with this mind control and taking people away from their lives and brainwashing them to be these little robots, worker ants for the head colony, you know.
So this Dr. Ilchi Lee, is he still alive to your knowledge?
Oh yeah, he's still alive. And supposedly he stepped down around 2010 when that wave of bad press came out.
Okay.
But that was just for show, I'm positive. They still advertise him on their website. If you look up the Body and Brain website, he's still prominently on there, and they have his accolades listed. You know, he's a best-selling author and so on and so forth, but they don't say like he's a prophet, because they don't want people to think they're a cult. They don't want them to know that they're a cult and that they have these bigger, like they have a vision. They don't put anything about that vision online. But if you go to, when I went to their retreat center, they had a big old banner that like had an illustration of it, you know, like the earth with people holding hands all the way around it, and it said 100 million Dawn healers. And then that was when I did attend a healer training before I knew what I was involved with. Yeah. It was really beneficial to me, and I joined at a time where I was vulnerable. I was mourning the suicide of a close friend, and on top of that, I was just a new I was a young person that had never been exposed to like kind of New Age spiritual stuff. Mm-hmm. It was always just the standard sort of American Christian, vaguely Christian kind of upbringing. And when I found just sort of the New Age spirituality stuff, it really called out to me. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I started doing yoga, and then I went looking for a new yoga studio when I moved, and they had their storefront, and it said yoga, meditation, Tai Chi, you know, they put all the buzzwords, all those New Age buzzwords, they just put them up there to like fly paper for to catch flies. And I was a gullible, naive little fly when I went in there. I was just like, oh, this place is really nice. And like, oh, these people are really sweet. They smile excessively, but you know, they're Korean. I guess that's how they do it over there. And then eventually, yeah, I did the exercises. They were really working good. And I signed up for a year because though it was really expensive, there was a better price to sign up for a year. So within like a couple weeks, I had agreed to a year. And then they said, we have this healer training thing and you become a dawn healer. And I was like, all right, let's do it. And then they say, oh, these other people are going, you want to go join with them? You go to Arizona. It's beautiful. We have our center there. It's called Mago Center and you'll love it. And it was expensive. It was about $4,000. But I had the money. I could pay it off in chunks. And as 23-year-old, I had a paying job and no other real family expenses beyond myself. So I signed up, went out and did it. And that when I got there, that's when it started to become a little bit more clear what was going on, because they had the 100 million healer thing. And I was like, cool, I'd like to be part of that, you know? And then, but they kept on bringing up like, to get 100 million healers, we need Dawn Masters.
Right.
And Dawn Masters were the true, like hardcore devotees that left their life behind.
Right.
And started speaking with Korean accents, even though they were from California or Washington okay. or the East Coast. And so I was happy to be a Dawn healer, you know, but they were not happy with that. It was clear they wanted me to become a Dawn master.
Right.
And the guy that was like my main recruiter, who's the headmaster of the location I attended, he said, before I went there, he's like, come back with your vision. I want you to focus on your vision the whole time you're there and come back and tell me what your vision is. There's no time to waste. Like the world is dying. Go get your vision. So I went there and it was all designed to make you decide, I really want to be a Dawn master. But I wasn't on board with that. I was like, yeah, that's a nice suggestion. I'm sure some people will be really good at that, but that's not for me. But I was reading some Tibetan literature at the time from like Tibetan Buddhism. And it has a lot of stuff in there. It was actually the book's called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And it's a modern book, but kind of illustrates their views on living and dying and how sacred it would be to help someone like work in hospice care, end of life care. So I was moved by that. And though I never got into this work, when I came back, I was like inspired. And I'd been reading that book and I said, he's like, you have your vision, right? And I was like, yeah, I do. And he's like, oh, most excellent. What is your vision? I said, I want to work with dying people. I want to help people that are dying. And he was like, what? No. Chris Do-Nim. And that was part of their code talk that they have, is they gave everyone like a name suffix. Like I was Chris Do-Nim, which means like Chris, low level student, essentially. And then you would be Casey Do-Nim if you came in there. And then they didn't have a special one for healer other than they just said healer Nim. But then every level had a name, like the Dawn Masters were Sabum Nim. So if I'd become a Dawn Master, I would have been Chris Sabum Nim. And then the headmaster was Jiwon Jang Nim, and so on and so forth. They had these Korean names, and you know, that just helps people reimagine their identity mm-hmm. when they're leaving mm-hmm. leaving their old life behind.
Yeah, I know some movements, they tend to use like different colored shirts or different colored ties or wristbands and things to show the difference in kind of tiers or levels, so to speak. Yeah. So I suppose that these name changes, not only do they encourage you to leave your old identity behind and pick up a new identity, but they also show the difference in levels, which I suppose if you're a committed member of the community, you strive to gain the highest title possible, perhaps.
For sure. And there was, it was evident in the uniform. The higher up you got, the more fancy of a uniform you got.
Right.
And there wasn't really, like, there was a lot of people in there and a lot of young people at the time. And there wasn't really like a clamoring to be the next Dawn Master so much and gain status, because everyone knew what that meant. Like, you were dropping out of whatever else it was you were doing and dedicating your life to this organization. But there was definitely like a prestige that came with certain things. Like I was very cooperative. Even though I was still doing my own thing, I did a lot of things that to the organization looked like I was a really good candidate to become a Dawn Master. So they zeroed in on me. And that headmaster at my location sort of took me under his wing and gave me extra attention. And even like when he moved to a different location that was just a little bit further away, it was like 4 miles away. And the one I started at was like within walking distance. But when he moved, he asked if I would move with him, if I would still attend his classes. And people were like, wow, that's like he invited you to his new studio. And yeah, wow, you should do it. You know, if like a master headmaster is like, you know, giving you attention like that, people were kind of like, wow, man, you're lucky. Whatever, so it felt like a prestigious sort of little honor.
And what year was this?
About 2003 2004.
Okay.
The very end of 2003, beginning 2004.
Okay. And so if the figurehead, if Dr. Ilchi Lee is still alive as far as we know, this must be a relatively new movement in itself, if he's the visionary and and he has put these practices in place and it hasn't kind of been passed down to him from generations, then this must be. Do you have any idea roughly when Dawn Yoga actually started?
Yeah, I believe he started doing his thing in the 80s.
Okay.
And he like first started leading little groups like in parks in the 80s, and then it grew. But I don't think they formed that specific company, Dawn Yoga, until the 90s, somewhere in the mid to late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So but he had already kind of gained a movement.
Yeah. You know? Something must have worked for between the 90s and 2010 to pick up that much traction and open centers around the world and have so many.
Sure.
Uses.
It's really successful on the surface level and at the beginner's level. If you go on Google and look up body and brain yoga and read reviews, it's like 99.9% positive reviews that people are getting good stuff out of it. And that's all well and good, but when they're taking advantage of people and if you look just a little bit deeper into a Google search, you'll find people that they took tens of thousands of dollars from, took years of their life, took them away from their family, and just brainwashed them, took advantage of whatever their vulnerability was, and just molded them into their own gain.
Yeah, you mentioned that you were sort of recovering from the loss and suicide of a close friend. But you also mentioned at the start of the episode that you were a seeker, a wanderer. You've always been the type of person, you know, who's always looking for something, maybe a bit different, maybe a little bit extra. So those two things together sound like, you know, like ripe for indoctrination almost. You obviously are at a spiritual crisis with the loss of your friend. I can't even begin to imagine how difficult it is to even know how to move on from something or how to heal from something like that. But then if a group approaches you or smiles, and as you said, perhaps this is the love bombing aspect of
the
movement.
Love bombing is their number one tool at the low level.
And then you're approached by them, and they tell you that, you know, they or they kind of infer that they have what you need to heal at that time. I can see why anybody in the world would be like, please help me, because this is, I just can't feel this anymore. So,
yeah. In our society, there's a lot of just secularism, a lack of spiritual acknowledgement. It's a capitalism sort of based culture where there's just not a lot of encouragement to think about spirituality or just life and death sort of things. That's not really acknowledged much in our just everyday lives, unless you carve that out for yourself. And I wasn't interested in being like into Christianity. Mm-hmm. That wasn't really my thing. And then I got into just yoga and New Agey sort of stuff. And there was just so much, there's so many cults out there that are just, they set up like a trap. They just know that people are going to come seeking and they just wait for you, whether it's the Hare Krishnas at the train station that want to give you a little book about, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, or if it's Scientology, or if it's, you know, there's so many, they're all over the place. And so in my travels, I've run into other ones. I've seen friends fall into other ones, and it's just, they're just all over the place, man.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you mentioned about how it on paper or in principle, as a casual member of Dharma Yoga, the benefits are huge. They are great. They do work for the most part for most participants. It's only kind of when you scratch below the surface that you realize that something's not quite right. And I find it more and more so in these interviews that I'm doing, that it's the same with things like the Hare Krishnas and Scientology. When people read Dianetics, there are basic life skills that can be applied that can help you with your health and well-being greatly.
Yeah.
But then as you kind of move through the process and the tiers and the levels, and you kind of put more money into it, and you're more is expected of you, and you leave more of your old self behind, and you gain more responsibility within the movement. That's kind of where you put yourself on the back burner, so that you can benefit the message of the movement instead of yourself. And that's what I'm finding more and more in these types of interviews that I'm doing. So, you start off as a casual member, and then you have to you pay for your yearly subscription, and then they're asking for these 100 million healers.
Yeah.
But to gather those healers, you're expected to then pay a significant amount of money into training. So is that the difference between a casual member and the next level up, that $4,000 payment and kind of training that you have to attend?
Yeah, sure. Even at the time, it was a very premium price for a yoga studio. I think it was about 170, it was about 200 a month at the time, as were other fancy yoga studios. Were like 125 a month at the time. So it was a big jump. Mm-hmm. But then when I signed up for a year, it was a little bit cheaper. It was 175 a month. And I thought, okay, like I can do that. And if it's really beneficial, then I'm willing to pay like a little bit extra. Mm-hmm. But then there's always more expenses. And there's always extra classes that cost money.
Right.
And they have a big basically brainwashing seminar that they run. And they run that for everyone, anyone that wants to attend. So then they'll host them in whatever city they're operating in. They call it Shim Sung, which means true self in Korean. And it's a day, it's like a weekend intensive kind of thing where you go home at the end of it. But they, I remember when I went, it was like all day Saturday and then most of the day on Sunday. And when you go home on Saturday, they're like, don't talk to anyone about this. They're not going to understand. Keep to yourself because you're in a state of energy where like you've dug up a bunch of stuff. And if you talk to people, it, like you might be vulnerable. So try not to talk to anyone. Don't talk to anyone about it. This is our very top secret. And then come back tomorrow and it's going to be awesome. And I think not only is it sort of a brainwashing seminar in the guise of find your true self, and you know, so many people feel lost in our materialism based culture that, you know, find your true self, they're like, yes, I've been wanting this my whole life. And then they go, and at the time that was $300 some odd, which is, again, it was expensive, but everything in the new age arena is always expensive. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like, dang, it's expensive, but okay, I guess that's what it's going to cost. And I looked online and saw recently that it's up to like $1,000 plus now, because that was 18 years ago when I was there. So it's at least three times as much now. And that serves as an opportunity for them to see who is pliable, who's a good candidate. They probably even rank people like, oh, he's a, that guy is a 10 out of 10. This girl's probably an 8 out of 10. That guy's not definitely thinks for himself too much. So don't invite him to further things. But there's always extra classes. There's extra, just a little extra one that would be like, this one's special. It's not part of the subscription. It's $40. It's like a really special though. It'll blow your mind. A lot of the classes were really good and really powerful, but it was always extra money. And still mm-hmm. people, when I look into it online, still to this day, they're like, it's always so much money. It's always, this is more money and that's more money, upselling constantly. And then if you go to a retreat and you go off to their retreat center in Arizona, now you're talking thousands for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned that when you first joined, there were other studios or programs in the area that you could have joined for slightly less money or significantly less money. Sure. But you said that you purchased the yearly subscription a few weeks after you'd been attending. So is it because you'd already kind of become or felt accepted in that particular community that you chose to commit that yearly subscription to that particular group?
It was so different and powerful. There was really powerful meditations that I went through. And like, for instance, anyone out there can really try this if they want. But like, they would have a special class where you rubbed your hands together for like 45 minutes. And then at the end of that 45 minutes, you stop kind of abruptly and then sit down and meditate and do a Qigong exercise where you hold your hands about a foot apart and feel the energy. And it felt like I was on hallucinogenic drugs from rubbing my hands together for 45 minutes. And you wouldn't just sit there and rub your hands and stare at them. They would play music and you'd get up and move around and run around the room. You just like keep your hands going the whole time. And like, if they start to get really tired, then like kind of rub the back of one hand and then rub the back of another hand and then just keep it going. Don't give up this whole time. And then, you know, they would kind of cool it down towards the end. Okay, we're slowing down. And then, but keep your hands going. And then they'd go silent. Like maybe the last 5 minutes is just silence and rubbing your hands and then stop and feel your hands. And it was just like wob 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 wob, this incredible kind of feeling. So stuff like that, I was like, this is a really powerful mm-hmm. and it may be kind of weird and funky, and it's not as physically challenging as say like a hot yoga, which I'd done before I'd gone in there, but it was just different and powerful. And it seemed like they did have like a bigger vision in mind other than just setting up a yoga studio and making money off of it. It seemed like they really did want to make a you know, just a different an impact on the world. Just, and also the Koreans, it was interesting to be around them. It was almost like traveling without going anywhere, because I was around all these Korean people, and they also really enforced the community aspect. Another thing that's like a great deficit in our society is a feeling of connection to community, and as a tribal species that really leaves a void in most people's lives. So they make this community atmosphere. There's a lot of like group exercises, like when you start, and then there's a group like sharing circle at the end, where everyone will go like, well, I felt this after the hand rubbing exercise. I felt that. And then they go around the circle, and that connects you to the group.
Yeah.
And a good, and that's a, can be a good thing, but they also exploit that to bring people into this group and make them feel like they have this community now that they can't leave. Even if there is like red flags flying all over the place, that now this may be a person that was just isolated in their go to work, go to home, go to the store kind of life. Now they have like people that care about them, and they have a community that's not just based off of like the, you know, just some club about cars or bird watching or other, those are great passions, but it's not on a deeper level. So this is like a group where you have, you talk about deeper level things, life and death and what your struggles are and existence and making the world a better place. And it's a really powerful thing, that community aspect. But unfortunately,
I mean, it sounds like something I'd love to be a part of on the surface. That sounds like who wouldn't want that, especially because as I mentioned before we started recording, this lockdown's been going on for basically over a year now. And I think you mentioned that tribal species comment before, and I think some of us are really starting to feel that now. So I could see why it would be appealing and why you would give such a significant amount of money. But it's interesting that you mentioned that they would encourage you to go to weekend seminars and not talk about what you'd been involved in with anybody outside of that when you'd left for the night. And then you sign up for this $4,000 retreat in Arizona, where you're not going to have the opportunity to discuss the things that you're doing on the retreat with anybody outside of the retreat. And I know that that's the purpose of a yoga retreat, that you go and disconnect, you know, from society. A lot of people go so that they can leave their phones and emails and technology behind and kind of reset and have that time sort of away from kind of bustling civilization, and to take a minute to kind of focus on themselves and center themselves and focus on their well-being. But when you've already been encouraged before you go to this retreat to not discuss what's happening in your seminars, to then go on the retreat, it kind of gives it a little bit more of a sinister feel, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, there was a lot of like people that were had some more healthy skepticism than I did. Actually, the first retreat I went on was within a month of joining. They had this retreat that was happening out at the retreat center in Arizona, and it was specifically for young people, which were their main target for recruitment to be masters. For one, young people are more naive. They have less attachments, like they're less likely to have a mortgage and be married and have kids and so forth. And they also have a ton of energy, you know, and which is going to be required to work, you know, from early in the morning to well after evening every single day. And I remember going to that retreat out there, and there was a handful of people that were just not, like, you could tell, I could see in their faces that they were like, this is creepy. You know, like the founder showed up there, and he was like the guest of honor. And there was one evening where they had us all in their main sort of lecture hall on the grounds there. And they were like, we're going to meet Ilchi Lee, tonight we're going to meet him. And they, you know, they're saying this through a microphone, and there's a few hundred people in the auditorium. They get everyone whipped up into a frenzy because there's already a bunch of true believers in there. And it looks like Beatlemania, you know, it's like people are screaming like, oh my God, he's going to be here. And then other people that are new, like myself, was, I was just kind of like, okay, like, all right, whatever you say, man. If they're like, get hyped, I'd just kind of play along and be like, woo, all right. Like, all right, man. But I wasn't taking it too seriously, but I also wasn't too put off at the time. I was just kind of like, what's this all about? You know, but there's some other people that were not clapping their hands, and it was like a group that went there together, and they were from Seattle, where I'm from and where I'm at right now, and I saw them because we ran in similar circles. So there was one of them in particular I saw when I got back, and I saw him at like a house where there's other friends, and I was like, oh, you were at that Don yoga retreat. And he was like, yeah, fuck that was a fucking cult, like, goddamn, that was creepy. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't know if they're a cult. Maybe they have an organization that, and it's sort of semi-spiritual. I don't think that necessarily makes them a cult, but I understand, you know, that it is odd and a little strange and so forth. But those guys knew right away. And
I think that's interesting as well, because if some of those members in that group together had attended separately, there could have been the opportunity that they might have seen it differently, because there's always strength in numbers, isn't there? So if there's if there's five or six people who think it's strange, you have more chance of being able to hold on to that seed of doubt than if it was just you on your own and everyone's being swept up into this kind of frenzy when this doctor arrives, and it's just you on your own. And then you're thinking, well, actually, if everybody else thinks this is so amazing and everybody else is so excited, maybe I'm the one that's doing something wrong or thinking about this in the wrong way. So
sure.
I suppose that they were quite lucky in one aspect, that they were all together and had that kind of same train of thought. So do you have any idea in total how much money you spent whilst you were part of this movement overall?
Oh, it was probably right around maybe under 10,000, because I was only in there about half a year,
right?
And the biggest ticket was that the Dawn Healer training, which was about 4,000. But that was not that expensive, considering it was two separate retreats. One of them was 5 days in Arizona, and I could fly fairly cheap because my dad worked for the airlines. I could get a cheaper, pretty dang cheap ticket, like $150 or so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't that expensive for me to travel. And it was a 5 day retreat. And then it was continued training at your own, like your home center. And then you went back to like graduate like 2 months or so later. And then that was a 2 day retreat just over a weekend. So it was like 7 days, a 7 day retreat all in all, plus their other healer training stuff, which didn't really, the at-home training didn't cost them any money because they had nothing but volunteer devotee employees doing most of the work. But luckily I got out just after that period of time, and what sort of facilitated that was I already had trouble with the organization. I had issues with how judgmental they were, and they were slowly trying to be more and more controlling of me. Like if I went on a different vacation with friends, like if I went up to Canada for a weekend, they would be like, oh, that's not good. That's not good for your spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. And like those people, these friends of yours, they don't understand you. They like to drink, right? They like to drink and party because, you know, that's what young people do. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't mean that they're bad people or they're trying to like pour booze down my throat all day. Like they're good people, and I just knew like they were, and I gave them the benefit of the doubt for a long time. But when I brought up this my issues with the headmaster guy, he's like, did you read something on the internet? you know, he's in speaking in a Korean, heavy Korean accent. So he's like, did you read internet? And I'm like, no, like, I have thoughts of my own and judgments of my own. And mm-hmm. my judgment is that you're being too judgmental of me and what I do with my time outside of the center. And so I was trying to kind of set some boundaries, and he wasn't really hearing it, and he kind of dismissed me, like said, you're reading stuff on the internet, don't read that, it's all lies, it's just people that are trying to, it's evilness, or, you know, people are trying to tear down the vision and so forth. And I was like, oh, okay, you know. And he was like, okay, I have to go, we'll talk later. And then when I got home, I was like, whoa, what's he so afraid of me reading on the internet? Because it hadn't even occurred to me, like, search Dawn Yoga and occult. But I did, and I searched just Dawn Yoga, and I didn't even have to search cult. It brought up all sorts of cult accusations. And when I read some of what people had to say, it was like the exact same experience that I had, the way that they lure you in with this like yoga and stuff. And it has basically nothing to do with yoga, as in yoga from India. It has very little to nothing to do with that. There's no down dog, there's no chaturanga, there's no traditional Indian yoga move. So it really should be called like Korean exercise, or you know, Korean wellness, you know, techniques, or anything other than yoga. They just put yoga up there, and Tai Chi and meditation, all things that are going to bring in the type of people that they're targeting. And when I searched online and saw like, oh, this is a cult, and saw like it, how everything mirrored my exact same experience. And I was like, oh, geez, like it really is. I should have like listened to those other people. I should have listened to my own voice. But by that point, I was already pretty heavily involved. I had like 9 months left on the year. I'd already signed up. I'd already done the healer training, part one of it. And I had a whole bunch of friends, like a really close knit group of friends just within the organization, in addition to the friends I had outside of the organization. I had like a possible romantic interest budding as well. And so it was just, I was set up for failure. But at the time I was like, I think I'll just stick it out and just stay close to my friends and not pay attention to the organization so much. But I could only lasted a few more months. I'd already paid for that retreat, so I went to that, and then, yeah, just went from there.
So even though you'd committed to several more months after reading this information, attending those events didn't do enough to bring your thoughts past what you'd read on the internet.
No, not at all. And then once I was aware of that, I could see so much more of the manipulation, and I saw like so much more like tragedy from it and victims of it. Like when I was at the retreat center, I remember being in line at the cafeteria and getting food, and to their credit, they fed us well, and it was actually really a lot of really good food, like Korean vegetarian food, and they gave you enough time to sleep. But that would change later on from what I've read about, like what masters go through in their training. They're given very little sleep, very little to eat, very little to drink. But at this point, they knew not to push that too hard, or people would just get out of there. Like, this is ridiculous. But I was there and I'm getting food, and there's a woman that's working in the kitchen, and she looks like she's running that kitchen, you know? And so I'm like, do you live out here? And we just work out here full time. And she says, like, yep, I sure do. And said, like, are you from around here? Like, do you live nearby? Like, do you have a home to go? I was intrigued because I knew that like everyone else there was Korean and devoted, essentially. So I'm thinking, is she like an employee, like getting paid, or is she a devotee too? Because most devotees became the masters, but like she was wearing the uniform, even working in the kitchen. But she revealed to me like, no, I work here full time. And she said that she had a family back at home, but like kids and a husband, but this was like the life for her. So she left all that behind.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
To just live and work at the retreat. And of course, I mean, if she had if she had like real crises, like mental, spiritual, physical crises that were plaguing her at home, I could see why a person would want to just stay at this retreat center in a beautiful Sedona country in the high plains of Arizona. But it's just an escape. And they're like, sure, you can come work for us for free and like leave your family behind. Like, they have no problem with that. And I could see that that was tragic. I could see other friends of mine starting to lose themselves into it. One person in particular, like really like became sort of like drone robotic, started speaking with like a slight Korean accent. And even though she was from West Coast, United States, born and raised, just like I was. And she even quit going to college. I heard that she had devoted quite a bit of her student loan, which I'm thinking into the at least 10,000, maybe more, she had devoted and just given over. And she'd also, I don't know if she gave them her car, but I saw, because in the neighborhood, I would see that her car driving, because it was a very distinct Volkswagen Jetta with tinted windows and red rims. So I'd see it and I'd start to like raise my hand to wave to her, but then I'd see it was Dawn Yoga people and she wasn't even in the car. And there was like four or five masters squished in there. I was like, what is going on? Like, they have taken that girl.
Wow. Yeah. That's, sorry, I just muted myself there because they're doing some construction outside and I don't know if the microphone's going to be picking it up, but there's some kind of drilling going on. So
I don't hear it.
There was a couple of things you mentioned there that I wanted to go back on. One of them was, sure, you mentioned that your friend had become kind of almost disassociated in how he was talking and coming across, and started speaking with a slight Korean accent.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So where do you think the disassociation comes from? You mentioned specific poses and exercises that would be prescribed to you individually. Sure. Do you think it comes from that or how does somebody go from kind of having this level of consciousness that you have, where you're looking around and seeing things that aren't quite right, to this almost detached state where you're kind of just done yoga and that's all that there seems to be?
I don't know what it takes, like what kind of person is more vulnerable to it. I mean, maybe I would have been more vulnerable to that level of dissociation and brainwashing if I had just been more vulnerable for whatever reason. But, and I don't know if my friend was vulnerable or I can't really judge what made her susceptible to that. But I'm guessing that it starts as just going to class, and then you're going, you know, like 3 days a week, and then they want you to come more, and it's rewarding. So you start going more. Maybe you go every single day if you can make it every single day, and then it becomes more like twice a day. And then they start, like they did this with me, they started inviting me to like staff only type of meetings, which was another sort of prestige type thing where other people are like, oh, what, you got to go to that, where it was like a special, like for instance, on a weekend, on an early morning, they had this thing that was called 1,000 bows, or maybe it was 300 bows. And they had this sort of sun salutation style bow exercise, which was pretty simple. You just sort of like reach your hands over your head, do a bow, get all the way down on the floor, like prostration, turn your palms up towards the sky, put them back down on the floor, and then stand back up and do that again. And I believe that the one I went to was 300, which took a long time. You know, it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that. And again, a powerful exercise. And I've seen similar stuff in like Kundalini yoga, where you just do this repetitive exercise. It's fairly simple, but it starts to get really hard after you've done that for 20 minutes. Then it gets really hard after 30 minutes. And then by like 45 minutes, you're just like, what is even going on? I don't even know. And by an hour, you're like, you're in a trance. So it was really, that was really powerful. And the one I went to was not for just regular members. And that one didn't cost me any money, extra money, but it was all like the employees and devotees from the area, from the Seattle area. They all converged on one of the centers that was like one of the bigger, nicer ones. And we all did that in the morning. And it was like me and like maybe five other people were not full on devotees, but they definitely were focusing on us. And like, I remember there was one, I think it was at that occasion, one of the other masters found me that I'd never met before. He was from a different location. He was like, oh, you are Christo Nim. Like, oh, Ryan Jiwanjing Nim talks about you all the time. He's talk about you and he's so proud of you and your growth. And so that was like flattering at the time. Like, oh, that's really sweet. I appreciate that. But mm-hmm. clearly they're getting the headmasters are getting together privately and talking about how their recruitments are going. I'm assuming with 99% assumption and confidence in that assumption that the headmasters have quotas that they have to meet. Like they got to bring in one new master a month or two masters a month, something that's going to be really hard to achieve. And hence they have this sort of sense of desperation. And that would explain, like, when I came back from the healer training and my headmaster was like, oh, you're going to become a Dawn master, right? I was like, oh, no, I want to work with dying people. He's like, what? No, dying people? That no.
You know. So I just wanted to quickly go back there and say that I just apologize. I thought when you talked about your friend in the disassociated state and your friend given all the money, I thought they were two different people. But now I've realized they're the same person.
Sure. But I mean, giving up a ton of money was very common in there.
Right.
I
was so it was a woman and not a man. I was saying he and him.
Oh, yeah.
And you were saying she. Oh, so I just apologize.
It applies. That. I knew men that were in there that gave up well over $10,000. There was a close friend of mine. He ended up being involved for 3 years. He even went to Korea with a group for a long time. And he was in Korea with the group when a lot of the alleged sexual abuse happened. Like he was in the sort of a small group of people that were privileged to be like in the main headquarters and close to Ilchi Lee. And
right.
I know that guy, he devoted probably $15,000 in that first year. So over 3 years, I'm sure he gave up tens of thousands. There was another woman that was there that in her story was she was an advertising executive that got paid really well. She was probably in her early 30s, but that career was also just eating her up from the inside. They had a routine of making tons of money and going out for martinis every night. And her health was just, dive bombing. And then so she found Dawn Yoga. And though she had not become a healer, or she had not become a master, she was a healer level like I was. And I had heard that she was conflicted even at that time with her membership, but she'd already given them $70,000.
Oh my goodness.
Of 2003 money. So
that's, I mean, that's probably what doubled by this time. I don't know.
Sure.
But that's. I mean, you hear so much with these types of movements that, you know, I did an interview way back now with a woman who went to a place called Zendik Farm, and she signed over a load of money, and then people would be signing over, you know, Synanon and the People's Temple and all of these movements that I've spoken about. People would be signing over houses and real estate,
yeah,
and leaving,
oh, yeah,
like leaving their all the money and worldly goods in their will to this movement that they're a part of. So that sounds, oh, yeah, like that's the type of thing that's also encouraged, or was encouraged in this movement when you were a part of it, for your friend to not only donate that much of her money but also her car,
yeah,
to just here, just have this. Like, that's something that I've always found really, I suppose, and speaking to the people that have themselves made these types of donations or payments to these movements, they hope in some way it will set them in good stead and in good light with people that are higher up in the movement. So I suppose there's that, you know, there's the, that could be a reason why you might feel inclined to,
well, yeah, I think
to do that.
Within the Dawn Yoga frame, you would think that you were helping save the world.
Yep, yep, yep. And you've already, like, said, you want to help people that aren't well, people who are living in hospices, people who are dying, yeah, and in bad health. So for them to come to you with a message saying, let's heal the world, I mean...
Yeah, it was about let's give all our power in the world to Dr. Ilchi Lee. Is really what it boiled down to.
Mm-hmm.
But they went back to the vision on everything. And they use that as the main guiding thing. Like, if you have questions, focus on vision. If you have doubts, focus on vision.
Right.
And
okay.
Like, even Headmaster, the Ryan guy, he told me that he'd confided in me that, he had not spoken to his family in Korea for 5 years.
Oh my goodness.
And that it was hard, and he cried lots of tears, but he had the vision, and he always went back to the vision of Dr. Ilchi Lee and the guidance of Dr. Ilchi Lee. And this vision that we're going to save the world is so much more important than his drama with his family back home, you know. And so that was him telling me, you know, like, because there was times I couldn't make it to something because I needed to have dinner with my mom and my, mm-hmm, brother, who I had not seen enough of because I spent all my time with these yoga people. And they're like, oh, you shouldn't, those people don't understand, and like, that's your, like, your biological family, this is your spiritual family, those people won't understand like what you're doing because they are not aware of the vision. And like, you believe in the vision, right? And, you know, there's a lot of that sort of speak to, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, you leading questions. You believe in the vision, right? Like, you're going to be there for the workshop, right? You can make it, no problem, right? Very, very common device they did.
Do you ever sit back and think about how your family, sort of like your mum or your brother, might have been affected if you did become one of these people that allowed, sure, Dawn Yoga to become the center of their life and not have contact with your family for like 5 years?
For sure. I mean, I probably would have stayed in contact with my family, and they would have allowed me to do what I was going to do, but they would have surely, like they did with everyone, they would take a master that was devoted and they would send them to a different part of the country, or even,
right,
a different part of the world, like Korea, like those, that group of people I was friends with went, they all went there for 3 years, like on part of a, whoa, program, quote unquote. But my mom, it would have stolen time. My mom has since passed away, and it definitely would have, mm-hmm, stolen time that we got to spend together if I disappeared into that movement for years at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned before about the kind of the vision, going back to the vision, and I've written here about the Hare Krishnas, because you brought them up towards the start of the episode, and then we've, sure, talked a little bit about sort of different poses and different workshops you attend where you do the same movement over and over and you almost become sort of in a trance. And that's very similar to what I've read or what I understand about the Hare Krishnas, with the chanting and the beads and kind of chanting over and over and over again for hours a day. And you're encouraged, you know, if your faith is kind of, if you're having doubts or you're not 100% sold on the idea of kind of the Hare Krishna principles, you're encouraged to go and chant for this, chant for that, chant for well-being, chant for karma. So a lot of people that practice that kind of explain and talk about how they end up in a trance-like state as well. And I feel like that makes you very susceptible to other people's ideas, and I feel that's quite dangerous in a way.
Yeah, it's similar even to like the military. When you join the military, they put you through a ringer of physical exercise with lack of sleep and lack of nutrition, and that just brings you to this point, this breaking point, where they can remold you into what they need you to be.
That's just exactly what came to my mind when you mentioned kind of being in this trance-like state. I can imagine that makes people much more agreeable to things that they might not have been agreeable to before entering that kind of frame of mind. So you mentioned when you went over to the retreat that you know they had good vegetarian Korean food, and you also mentioned that you were kind of encouraged not to associate with people so much outside of the Dhan yoga. So those to me is what I would class that as a restriction. Were you encouraged to take up vegetarianism full time as being a member of Dhan yoga?
No, I'm not sure what the basis of the vegetarianism was at the retreat, other than it might just have been cheaper. But it was also just more accommodating because most people, not most, but there was a large percentage, higher than the general population, of people that were members were vegetarians. I think I was, at the time, I was already vegetarian. So I was vegetarian for a long time. And it started right about then when I got into like the new agey kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And but definitely I know like the master that I, the headmaster I was associated with, he was a meat eater for sure. I knew that from just whatever he was. I remember him talking about that, eating Korean barbecue or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he also confided in me that they drank, like the headmasters would get together like once a week and get drunk.
Right.
And I think he was trying to tell me that so that I would. And he's not supposed to tell people that, but I think he took a little gamble there so that I would think that, oh, it's not all just monastic life. Like you have some fun too. Like once a week they get together and get drunk. But I'm guessing that's headmasters only. That was not going to be the low, the low level Dawn masters, which I know that they controlled them fully, and that those were the people that started, that had the glazed look and zombified look in their eyes, and they all kind of would take on the same haircut, the same pattern of speech. They have to basically have to wear that Dawn yoga master uniform all day.
Every day. Yeah, that was another thing I was going to ask about, sort of clothing and if there was anything that was encouraged on in terms of restrictions around things that are seen as good and bad within the movement. But were you ever encouraged to recruit anybody into Dhan yoga? Or was there any type of, that's definitely what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Were you ever encouraged to bring anybody into Dhan yoga to recruit them? And how would that be kind of proposed to you to do that?
Not really. Though I think they did have like a bring a friend day, was like on the weekend or something like that. So they didn't really pressure you to bring people in, though there was one, they had this big seminar one day one weekend. It was called the Brain Respiration Festival. And it was just silly. But at the time, they were launching this whole kind of other branch that they called brain respiration and just like working with brain energy. And it was like this weekend sort of seminar. And it was expensive. It was like $200 a piece. And they had a big push on that. And they wanted you to bring people and bring your friends, bring your family. And they had made it sort of like a big party kind of thing, but it was all just a recruiting tool to get more people to show up. And I talked sort of in good faith at the time. I was like, okay, like you asked me to, I'll bring it up. I'm not going to push anybody to come to this thing, but I brought it up with my immediate friends and they were like, oh, maybe, how much is it? And I'm like, $200. They're like, yeah, no.
Yeah, that's no. Deep.
And so they shot themselves in the foot there, where they obviously had tons of cash. Like their centers were nice, but especially that retreat center in Arizona was extremely nice. A really not luxury for the casual user, and definitely not for their devoted employees, but definitely there's a luxury residence on the premises for Ilse Lee. And it was just a really well, like, you know, when a place has plenty of money. And like just the hall, the main meeting hall, lecture hall, was a very nice facility with air conditioning. And I'm guessing it was so in the middle of nowhere, they were probably running on generator power, and a place that big would probably be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars per day just in diesel fuel to run like a diesel generator. And so that was the only real recruiting that they were a little bit pushy about. And I didn't even go to that thing because I had to work on the weekends, and I'd already used up all my other vacation leave for the other stuff. So they were really pushy and kind of beside themselves that I wasn't going to make it to this thing. That was obviously a major point of emphasis at that time for the organization. They're like, oh, you have to go. And I'm like, I can't, I'm working. And they're like, oh, you have to get off work. I can't, I've already used up all my leave time to be at these other retreats that we already did. And they're like, oh, you must go. And everything short of asking me to call in sick, they were just like, you got to be there. You must be there. They weren't hearing it, but I didn't go, couldn't make it. So
that kind of pressure, though, I see why it's easier for some people who just kind of quit their jobs so that they can just kind of do this full time without the pressure of kind of being
well
told.
Another big thing of how they got masters to devote was you could basically start a credit with them that, like, okay, I'm going to do this training. It's $5,000. Just put it on my tab. Okay, that was really amazing. Would you like to do this other training? Well, this one's a little bit more expensive. It's $13,000. And then pretty soon you might owe the organization, and you've signed contracts. They make sure to have their paperwork in order. You might have signed contracts for tens of thousands of dollars. And then they say, when you become a Dawn Master, like, all that goes away. Mm-hmm. So you've got this debt hanging over your head, and they go, you become a Dawn Master, and poof, it's gone. And so just another major tool to get people to turn it all over for them.
So you don't have to wonder what happened to those friends that you brought into the fold, because you never really brought any of your personal friends into the movement.
Luckily.
Yeah, it's just interesting that sometimes I speak to people and they're like, well, I did bring one or two people in.
That would be devastating. Like, did you watch the Nexium documentary?
I did, yeah. The Seduced.
I think, there's like a couple. I watched them all. I consume cult stuff. Ever since I was involved with them, I've been very interested and borderline obsessed with not just cult stuff, but mind control techniques. And that girl, that there was the famous actress, right? And she got her daughter involved.
Yes, yeah.
And then her daughter was one of the most deeply abused and brainwashed people in there. It's like, oh my God, she brought her daughter in there. One of my great fears is that like one of my kids someday would join a cult and I would lose them. A way that's like just a deep fear that arose at some point. Like, oh my God, what if that this happens to somebody, one of my kids down the road? And so if I was the one that invited them, good God, that would be absolutely devastating on so many levels. Now that I think about it, I did help them with advertising a couple times. And I didn't have to think about that much or feel guilty because I didn't see, like, if that brought people in, I didn't see it. I helped mm-hmm. them hand out flyers at one or two occasions. And then I helped them advertise for that Brain Respiration Festival thing. We went to a college campus. And my other friends were there, and they set up a little booth. And since my friends were going to be there, I was like, all right, I'll show up as well. And so in retrospect, I sure hope I didn't send anyone down that path. But, you know, that's just karma.
That was the type of propaganda that you might come across with Dawn Yoga back before 2010 was kind of handing flyers out on the street.
Uh-huh. And they like to do like sort of grassroots advertising like that, like handing out flyers. And they also they would have windows. They preferred studios that had big visible windows so that people would see the classes going on in there and be like, hey, what's that all about? And mm-hmm. I think they changed that after they had to rebrand their organization. And because there was a couple studios that remained operating for a long time in the area here, and there's still two left, but they're in different locations than I ever saw classes in. But there was one in an area, and I'd frequent that area fairly often, and I noticed that over the years it became harder and harder to see into the studio. Like, they covered right. up all the windows. It still said yoga, tai chi, open, come on in, and it had sort of an Asian vibe to it, like the type of curtains that they had covering the windows had an Asian aesthetic to them. But you could not see into the class anymore. I think right. they reached a level where they wanted to bring people in, but they also want to keep a low profile because they don't want any more Rolling Stone exposés that say on mm-hmm. the front cover that the yoga cult is what it said on the cover of Rolling Stone. That was a nightmare for them, I can only imagine.
From what you've read now and accounts that you've kind of kept up to date with, do you think that Body and Brain Yoga and Tai Chi are running their brand with the same systems in place that Dawn Yoga were using when you were a member way back in 2003?
Definitely. Definitely. I know that from searching online, there's a lot of the same like higher up masters, which are like these masters that they consider their masters and like their master indoctrinators, or they're just like high level instructors. And a lot of them came from very prestigious positions in Korea. Like, they're professors at very prestigious universities in Korea. And so especially within that culture, they're like, look at this guy. He was like a high level professor at that high level college, and now he's just doing Dawn Yoga and being like an instructor for Dawn Yoga. And I can see online too that they still, the main complaints are still there, the pushiness, the high pressure sales techniques, the incessant like upselling of expensive things. And like, I read one negative review recently that was saying like, I went in there a few times and it was okay, but every time I went there, they were trying to sell me on another class. Like, I just want to go to yoga and go home. I don't want every time I go in there to try to get me to go to this other class that costs $100 mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And actually, I did a different podcast last year talking about this same subject mm-hmm. and a woman on the other side of the country from me saw that podcast and sent me a message that just said, thank you so much for talking about this. I was just about to give body and brain yoga like several hundred dollars for training that I can't really afford, but I have these problems and they're telling me that this is going to fix my my depression. It's going to fix my depression or like my chronic pain. It's going to fix my problems. And they were just, she said that they were really pushy, including like contacting her on like off hours, you know, like weekends, on the evening, like a weekend, like as she's about to go to bed, she gets a message from the headmaster that's saying like, have you made a decision? Are you going to go and do it? And she's just like, geez, this is really pushy. And she also mentioned the American masters speaking with a Korean accent. So that is still a phenomenon that is taking place 18 years later.
So in terms of the rebranding of the movement itself, it literally just sounds like there's been a name change and that's it.
Yeah.
And obviously for sure. Trying to keep a lower profile.
And obviously Ilchi Lee's still involved. They tried to say he stepped down, like I mentioned before, but he's all over the literature and the websites. And
yeah, I was Googling him recently and I found that he, as recently as 2019, has released YouTube videos about brain meditation how he is actually being called the founder of brain meditation. And that he is the founder of mind body training methods and brain respiration, brain wave vibration. So he's being kind of cited as this founder of all these different types of meditations, which is
one
interesting.
One of the goofy, that brain respiration bullshit was just getting going when I was there. Like I mentioned, and one of the ridiculous aspects of it that I never got on board with, thankfully, was they had these little brain. It was like a little rubber brain that vibrated. And they had them for sale in the shops and at all the centers. And you were supposed to buy two of them. And they were $80 each.
My goodness.
This is in 2003. I'm sure if they sell them now, there'd be $200 each, but it was an $80 little egg-sized brain rubber thing. And I can't remember how you turned it on. Maybe it was like a push button or something, but you turn them on and it just vibrates. Just a vibrator.
What are you supposed to do as well? Buy a load of batteries to keep using them as well.
Yep. And you're supposed to meditate with the prescribed from Ilchi Lee designed brain wave meditation or whatever. And you would hold them in your hands. And they also sold CDs that you're supposed to listen to. And I never got into all that. I was like, I don't want to buy a device that's like required for me to meditate. I was immediately like, no, I'm not doing that. Maybe if it was, you know, like what it actually cost, like $5, I might have given it a try, but they were $80 a piece. And I wasn't having it.
So when you actually take the decision to leave and you kind of put things in place to kind of not return to Dhyan Yoga, do you inform anybody that you're leaving? What does that look like, that transition?
I think it was a long time ago now. And I think I couldn't attend classes for a week or something because I went somewhere on a trip or something. And I was already starting to distance myself. Like I was spending too much time with them. And then I figured out they were a cult. And then so I started spending, I didn't do any more like volunteer work for them after I ran into that, those testimonies online, and really kind of started to have to admit to myself this is most definitely a cult, even if it doesn't fully resemble like the Jim Jones massacre or the Moonies or the Manson family. Just because it didn't look just like that didn't mean it wasn't a cult. So I stopped doing the extra stuff And but though I was still hanging out with the friends because I enjoyed those people and cared for them, still do. But then I went on a trip or something, and so I hadn't gone in for a week. And then just the thought of going back in there was just like, ugh, like, oh God, I just don't want to go there anymore. And when I resolved to just stop going, it was like this weight was lifted off my shoulder. I could breathe fresh air again. And mm-hmm. It felt so good, but it didn't feel like it was within aligned with my integrity to just stop going. It felt kind of weak. So, but I also didn't want to give them a chance to like guilt trip me or just have an awkward, like, you know, sort of thing. So I just sent them like a postcard that I think I bought from their gift shop. I bought like a little set of postcards, and which were funny. It was like the sort of goddess imagery of like a goddess holding the earth. And of course the goddess was very Korean looking, just a coincidence there. But I said, Dawn Yoga is a path, but it's not mine, Chris. And that was it. And I never went in there again. And actually, I had part of my subscription is I had written them pre-written checks so that they could keep cashing them.
Right.
And I was wondering, like, if they keep cashing my checks, I'm going to cancel them. And then yeah. I wondered if they would come after me because I signed the contract. But they cashed that last check for that last month that I was like, even though it was only like at the very beginning of the month, they cashed that one. I think it was for like July. And then I was like, if they cash the one for August, which because they were all predated checks,
yeah.
If they cash the August one, I'm canceling the rest of them. And if they want to come after me, we'll have it out. But they didn't cash the rest of them, to their credit on that. To that aspect, they did not need my measly $175 a month. They had millions and millions of dollars rolling in all the time from their centers around the world, all the expenses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you've mentioned that lady reaching out to you. So it sounds as if the first podcast you featured on already made such a huge difference to people that may have been listening. So I'm just wondering,
that's at least one. I mean, yeah. I know like it's on YouTube, and last I checked, it didn't have a ton of views. It was like 300 something views, you know. It wasn't any like huge Joe Rogan podcast type numbers or anything, but just out of that little sample size, it got to one person. So I have to assume maybe it got to 3, 4, or 5 other people. And I assume that I'm going to go ahead and assume that this podcast as well will reach someone and help them,
hopefully,
and hopefully prevent a tragedy, because people have died in the hands of this Dawn Yoga organization. You can look that up online too. There was a suit against them for wrongful death because one of the people that was going through their Dawn Master training, they had them doing some extreme. It was like they were supposed to hike in the Arizona desert mountains with a backpack full of rocks.
Oh, gosh.
And no water. And this poor woman passed away from heat exhaustion.
Oh,
heat
my goodness.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the listener base here is not too high itself, but there could be people listening. I've just interviewed somebody who spoke to me about his experience in Shincheonji, which is a movement which sounds in some aspects a little bit similar to this one, in terms of it being sort of Korean based and Korean community at the forefront of the movement and things like that. Even if it's not people particularly or specifically from this movement, I imagine there'll be others who will recognize the signs or red flags and say to themselves, you know, oh, maybe Maybe it's time for me to take a step back too. So I just wanted to ask, before I hand it over to you and ask if you think we've missed anything, what advice you would give to people who are maybe thinking about taking that step back?
You know, I don't think we've missed, I can't think of anything we've missed.
Okay.
Pretty much covers my experience there. And covers my concerns that they're still operating. Mm-hmm. They just changed their name and kind of became more discreet and then just carried on with what they've been doing. And obviously they're still trying to pull people in and do it. And they're still turning people into zombies. And, you know, as far as someone that's in that wants to get out, I wish there was an easy answer to that. As far as in my research on cults, there is no easy answer. Sometimes people, it ultimately has to come down to them. You know, if they're over 18 in this country, they have to decide for themselves. And in our world here, there's a lot of people that are lost, feeling lost and lonely. And then they find this other life where they find spiritual fulfillment, and they find a community fulfillment. Yeah. And though they may feel drawbacks, like, well, I don't see my family anymore, and I do feel guilty about that, but now I'm saving the world, and it's part of my sacrifice. It's part of the cross that I have to bear, is I sacrificed my previous life. Even though I loved my friends and family, I was also depressed. Maybe they were suicidal. Maybe they were just so brutally lonely feeling that even though they have their reservations about the cult, they don't want to go back to the life that they used to have. So I would just encourage anyone in that situation to believe that you can create a better life for yourself. You don't have to go back to your old life, and you don't have to remain in a cult either, where you have no autonomy and you have no individuality. You can get back and you can find a community. You can find friends. You can find positive. You can be helpful to the earth. You can help. You can be helpful to humanity. It doesn't have to come through this one organization that I'm sure, if you're even hearing the sound of my voice, you know that there's something off, something wrong there. But I would even ask you in your research that you've done while doing this podcast, have you come across any good approaches or techniques, strategies to help someone that's in a cult, or someone that has a loved one that's currently in a cult?
Yeah, I spoke recently to Dr. Diana Lalich, the very well-known cult expert, and she gave some fantastic advice. She mentioned things like if you have or suspect a family member or loved one is involved in sort of a coercive controlling environment, to make sure that you never fully close the door on that person, always keep as much contact with them as possible, always you know, be in touch with them, remind them of Christmases and holidays that you've shared, remember this, remember that from years ago, and make sure that they always know that you're there, and remind them of reasons why you shouldn't want to leave your family and friends behind. You know, reasons why your family aren't necessarily evil or trying to stop you from fulfilling your full potential in the movement that you're involved in. So that was one of the things she mentioned was important, you know, just making sure that you never shut the door on somebody completely, because you feel like you've tried everything to pull them out of that movement and they are just not listening to anything you're saying. So that was one really good piece of advice. And from the majority of victims and survivors I've spoken to, a lot of them have said, you know, get your ducks in a row before you leave, with movements such as Scientology and Jehovah's Witnesses that have sort of shunning policies in place that mean that when you leave, you know, if you're disfellowshipped, you're probably no longer going to be able to have regular or any contact with family and friends. So if you are leaving that movement on your own, you know, to make sure you have your ducks in a row, to make sure that things are in place for you to be able to cope without that familial support. So that was a great piece of advice. And to look at, if possible, critical thinking courses, which can just confirm for you that the doubts you had were correct. That kind of fight or flight was kicking in when you were thinking that I don't want to leave my family behind. I don't want to donate this amount of money. I'm not getting enough sleep. I'm not eating enough food. So to read things about critical thinking is fantastic because it gives you that space to analyze what you're thinking and feeling and make a decision on that based on the things you're reading, as opposed to your thoughts and feelings that at that time could be very easily manipulated. So that was some good advice. Others, which you've mentioned here quite a lot, is just research, read everything you can, go on the internet, read books, read articles, research yourself as much as you can on.
Yeah, that really pulls back the veil when you see other people. You thought you were having this unique experience. For instance, what their script for bringing in new people was, like what I did. I saw the storefront, said yoga, tai chi, meditation, went in there, and there was a young lady, and she was very happy to see me. She smiled, looked me right in the eye, and this was all by design. They instructed her to do this, and they instruct all of them to behave this way, where they really shower you with the love bombing aspect. Mm-hmm. And then they say, you're like, okay, when do I come to class? And they're like, okay, we do things a little different. Before you come to class, you meet with the headmaster. And then you will set up a time for you to meet privately with our headmaster. And they kind of give them this gravitas and this prestige, like, oh, yep. The headmaster. And then, so like, okay, you know, Tuesday at 1:30, I'll meet with the headmaster. And you walk in there and they sort of, with more of the gravitas and whatnot, you walk in and like the lower master will lead you to like the office where the headmaster is. And he's in there. He was sitting cross-legged, you know, in the sort of very feng shui little room with like the incense going. And they say like, yes, please come in, sit down. And like they talk to you for a little bit, and then, but it's just very quick surface level stuff. And then he said, like, do you mind if you may lay down and I will read your energy? And then he kind of waved his hands over me and then asked if it was okay if he kind of prodded my body on my abdomen, and he kind of poked me in the belly. And I was like, you know, ow, that's uncomfortable. And he's like, that hurts? And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of uncomfortable. And he's like, oh, that's bad. That's like you, your energy in your body is like an old man. You're like an old man. You're only 23. Wow. Your energy is like that of like a someone in their 50s. Like, wow, you're in really poor energetic health. And, I was a little bit like, okay, if you're right, then maybe I'm, you know, drinking too much or smoking too much pot or something. But, was like, okay, I feel pretty healthy. Pretty active and whatnot, but if you say so, if you say my digestion is poor. And but then when I went on the internet, it was everyone had that same experience. It was, oh yeah, we went in there and we had a meeting with the headmaster, and the headmaster told us that our energy was in super poor health and that we had the body of like an 80-year-old, and that we had to start coming to classes right away. And they presented you with paperwork right then, like, you want to sign up for a year,
right? Yeah,
like, here's the clipboard and here's the paperwork. And once I saw that other people that had the same experience, it really lifted the trickery, that the wool that was pulled over my eyes, that was lifted up. And like, yeah, they say that to everyone, dumbass. And I was like, oh God, what have I done?
But it's, I mean, that's what the internet is great for. There are so many reasons why the internet is not great, but one of the things that it's really handy for in this sense is, you mentioned that Dharn Yoga had centers all over the world. If it wasn't for the internet, me and you wouldn't be able to be having this conversation right now. So I wouldn't be able to go online and read your experience all the way over in America about the things that you've experienced, and vice versa. You know, you could read an article from somebody over here in the UK and be like, oh my goodness, they've had exactly the same experience and they're all the way on like the other side of the world. So that's another reason that the internet's really handy. That's why I always talk about Reddit and the subreddits that exist in terms of support for people that leave these groups. And the last piece of advice really that comes up quite a lot in these interviews is to access therapy if possible. It's not for everybody. It's not accessible for everybody. Some people manage with family support and reading things up and self-help techniques, but for some people that have experienced particularly extreme cases of abuse, psychologically, emotionally, physically, sometimes therapy is the one thing that they have said has worked for them in terms of reversing the indoctrination and transitioning from life in under a coercive control and system into sort of typical life that you and I experience now. So that would be the last part really. So I guess all that's left to say, Chris, is it's 3:45 in the morning for you.
Yeah.
So it's extremely late. And I know that you work the night shift, so it's not too much of a big deal, but I was so surprised when you said, let's talk at this time. And are you sure? Because that's like 2 in the morning. So I really appreciate you taking time out of your evening to speak with me today, for giving me all of these experiences and hopefully allowing others to listen to your stories and take from that what they need to, even if it's just a simple piece of research on the internet that manages to get them to take a step back. Or people who like yourself have been away from these movements for years and years, but can sit there and listen and reflect and say, I remember all of these things very well. And they're very similar to what I experienced. So I can't tell you how appreciative I am for your time, for just you to sit here and trust me with your stories and give me these experiences and allow us to go on and present them to our few listeners. So thank you so much, Chris. And I really, really hope that you enjoy the rest of your shift.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you for having me on and doing what you do. It's a great service to the world and appreciate it. And you'll be getting more and more listeners as time goes on. Cults is like a really interesting subject, not just for us, but it's constantly out there for the world. Whenever there's a big cult story, or there's constantly new cult documentaries every year. And it's important. And it's not just cults and religious spiritual organizations. It's just mind control. Mm-hmm. Mind control is being deployed upon human populations everywhere constantly, and just the more aware we can be of the tactics and the strategies, the more we can see it when it's a multi-level marketing business or
yes.
or a political movement or mm-hmm. whatever it is, we can hopefully just be more aware and stamp it out and just be aware, conscious peoples, and you do the right thing always.
So yep.
Thank you once again, and keep doing what you're doing. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'll speak to you soon. Take care. Bye.
Take care. So long.
That is the end of this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch, please do so by emailing me at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter and Instagram @cultvaultpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, and this is The Cult Vault.